across the room to their bed. Little Rukia opened her eyes, having heard every word. They had not rewound the cloth around her, and so for one of the rare times in her young life her arms were free. She took the opportunity to flex them and move them, and felt indeed as if a great weight had at last been lifted from her. She managed to get both of her little arms into view long enough to study that which her parents had discussed. The images, the scars, brought her back to a morning long ago, when she had awakened in her tent beside her husband Drizzt. They were on their way back to Mithril Hall, unaware of the great changes that were even then beginning to befall their world. On that fateful day, Catti Bree had been struck by a falling strand of Mistra's magical weave, the weave of magic itself, and the blinding power of magical energy bared had overwhelmed her and driven her mad. The weave of Mistra, the Lady of Magic, who carried as her symbol the seven-pointed star. She had not recovered from that interaction, and indeed, had inadvertently afflicted Regis with the insanity as well. In that confused state, Catti Bree had passed away, and Mialiki had taken her spirit from Mithril Hall. She looked at her right forearm, at the horn, the unicorn horn symbol of Mialiki, and gave thanks and praise, her blue eyes filling with tears of joy. The year of the six-armed elf, 1464 DR, Netheril. Rukia sat in the corner, pretending to play with the polished stones Niraj had given to her. It had been a long first year of life anew, full of deception that had greatly wearied this impostor child. She had crawled early, the Bedine believed, at only 5 months, and had walked before her 10th month, and quite capably, it seemed. In truth, the baby could have climbed from her crib a month after her birth, stood up and paced around the house with little trouble. In fact, she had done just that one quiet night, and had spent every moment she was not wrapped in swaddling cloth, testing and strengthening her infant limbs. She hadn't talked yet, though she had much to say, and she wasn't even sure of when such conversation might be appropriate, for in her previous life, Catti Bree hadn't had much contact with children. She knew it was important to seem somewhat appropriate to her age, both for her own sake and for that of her parents, whom she had already come to love as if they were actually her family. Catti Bree had learned much in the years she had spent as Rukia. The Bedine were prisoners in their own land, this land that had been Anorak, but was now known as Netheril, the heart of Netherese power. These conquering Netherese would not suffer Bedine to be more than simple tribesmen and nomads, wandering the wasted ways of the still barren and wind-blown lands that had once been the great magical desert of northern Faerun. Her outward appearances aside, Catti Bree was not a simple one-year-old child and could not be. She had been studying the ways of arcane magic when the falling strands of Mistress Weave had assailed her in her previous life. And her time in Aruladun, dancing and singing to the song of Mialiki, had given her greater insights into the magic she had previously known, and had also, of course, taught her how to call for the divine magic of the goddess who had come to hold her so close. Such skills required practice and repetition. As surely as the movements a warrior might make to defend and thrust forth his weapon. The little girl watched her parents carefully. Niraj left the tent, and Kavita was busy repairing some weapons. How ironic it was for Catti Bree to see the woman glancing around nervously, then calling upon some magic of her own to help her in mending the blade of a curving sword. Ironic, because her child was doing the same thing in the corner of the same room. Catti Bree held each of the polished stones close to her breast and whispered into them, imbuing them with symbols that only she could see, with an enchantment she had cast upon herself. These invisible markings turned the stones into a sort of oracle, and the child began casting them forth, silently asking questions, with the stones providing guidance. She studied one answer for a long while, not really trusting what her magically enhanced eyes were telling her. It seemed too dangerous. She collected the stones and asked again, then tossed them out before her. The same response was given. Catti Bree nodded. She would find a way. That very night, her parents asleep across the room, Catti Bree cast an enchantment around the room, one designed to compel sleep. A bluish mist curled around her left arm with a magical enactment, but while it startled Catti Bree, she did not fear it. She slipped from the crib and quietly padded out of the tent on little bare feet. The camp was asleep. Somewhere out on the dusty plain, a wolf howled and was answered. The little girl was not afraid. Certainly, she did not feel threatened by any of Mialiki's animal children. She moved past the tents and out into the wastes, following the path the oracle stones had shown to her. That night, in a secret and sheltered clearing, she planted her first garden shrine to the goddess. She returned to the place often, always at night, and when the tribe moved on, as was their way, the girl created another garden shrine and another after that. In these sanctified places, hidden amongst the rocks, Catti Bree found Mialiki more keenly and was taught about the land, this land. A land that had been, not so long ago, a great desert. A land that would be, not so long hence, a desert once more. The year of the first circle, 1468, DR, Netheril. Soaking wet from the downpour, her hair still muddy from being thrown by Tanud into the mud pit, 5-year-old Catti Bree stood defensively in front of her fallen mother, her eyes glowing fiercely, the blue strands of magic wafting out of the sleeves of her torn sarong like living serpents. She noted the boots of the Netherese assassin, smoke wafting from them. Her lightning bolt had jolted the man violently into the air, so abruptly and powerfully that he had left his shoes behind. She shivered, humbled and overwhelmed by the power she had created. No, not created, she realized, but by the power she had been allowed to access through the magic of her spell scar. She wanted to turn back and enact more healing magic on Kavita, but she didn't dare, not yet. The immediate threat was no more, obviously, for the two Netherese assassins were surely dead. Their smoking, lifeless husks lying motionless, the entire front section of the tent torn away behind them. She prepared another spell, reaching up once more to the thunderstorm she had earlier conjured, ready to pull more lightning from it to vanquish any new enemies that might appear. The view of the encampment lay open before her now, the flashes of lightning